You certainly don't want to listen to anyone preach to you about quitting smoking. Nicotine in your blood. I'll just have this one, but I won't have any more. Nicotine overdose. How about doing something physical? Everyone will understand. Nicotine on your hands could get into your eyes and nose and could cause stinging, redness, or irritation problems. Hey, one's not gonna kill me. Your senses of smell and taste may improve. Have a mint. Cope with temptations to smoke. You'll be able to enjoy life without relying on a cigarette.
Studios of WRPI in Troy, New York. This is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, what happens when you mix the two, and where, like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter. I'm here this afternoon with Phil and Lil. Say hi, guys. Oh, hang on. Let's try bringing those mics up. Maybe they'll work better.
Hello.
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 And Phil's not at his mic right at the second because he's taking a picture, so we'll let him do that. Anyway, this is a show where we're talking about high technology, low intelligence, what happens when you mix the two, and we're like any responsible little brother. We tell on Big Brother, the three of us will be your hosts for the next hour as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode number 32 of Little Brother, dated the 26th of January, 2002. Stay tuned, Little Brother's right around the corner. Okay, I think we're ready to actually try this thing. The show is Little Brother, the topic is technology. The opinions and views expressed in this show are strictly those of the participants, not necessarily those of Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, the WRPI staff or management, or the Rensselaer Student Union. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request airtime for a rebuttal. And if you'd like to throw your 2 cents worth in, please feel free to. The number here it is, area code 518-276-6248. And I feel terribly, terribly disorganized this week, so we're going to kind of wing it here and hope for the best.
How's this different from every other week?
You know, that's a good question. I'm not exactly sure. But here we go. We'll start off as usual with our items from the Risks Digest. This one was submitted by Jonathan Larmore, who says that, who headlines it, Bulgarian Parliament Against Weight Loss. According to the UK Daily Telegraph, the Bulgarian Parliament has a system of electronic voting whereby members vote with cards using a machine attached to their seats. Unfortunately, the designers didn't anticipate that more enterprising MPs would swap seats and also slip a voting card into an absent neighboring colleague's machine. I would have thought the surely obvious solution to this problem would have been personalized cards, but instead the parliament is introducing weighing scales set into the seat so that the votes will not be counted unless the weight of whoever is sitting at these machines is that of the MP whose seat it is. The risks of the initial design are obvious. There appears to have been absolutely no consideration of security or checking whatsoever. The risks of the solution are even more interesting, including the possibility of preventing someone voting in the afternoon by making sure that they have a large lunch. Amusing. Declan McAuliffe submits that Pope John Paul says the internet caters to the best and the worst of human nature and needs regulation to stop depravity flooding cyberspace. He warned that while it offered access to immense knowledge, the internet did not necessarily provide wisdom and could easily be perverted to demean human dignity.
Wow, the Pope's on the ball. How long has the internet been demeaning human dignity now? What, like a decade?
And yeah, it's getting
Pope
pretty
John
close
Paul,
to that.
John Paul, always on top of the new stuff.
Yeah.
That's right.
But anyway, yeah, and you're Catholic saying this.
Yeah. Hey, he's human too.
Public authorities surely have a responsibility to guarantee that this marvelous instrument serves the common good and does not become a source of harm, he said. Although the Pope does not have an email address, the Vatican has an active website, www.vatican.va, and the church is reportedly searching for a patron saint of internet users. I thought they had already picked Gabriel for that.
No, I don't know that it was Gabriel, but there was somebody. I was on a saint site just the other day. They have a saint for just about everything, you know. They have a saint for brigands. Brigands have their own. That must have been quite a while ago because we don't use the term brigands much anymore. But they have a saint for television. They have a saint for the radio. They have a saint for, oh, this is a great one. They have a saint for air workers, like air crews.
Oh, cool.
But different countries have different saints.
In other words, it wasn't the Vatican that spoke on the topic. It was,
apparently. Yeah. Apparently. Yeah, there's, well, no, the Vatican, I believe, just declares them saints. And then, you know, it's kind of like by usual, just by like how the cards fall, you know, which saint is most commonly used for air crews or whatever to represent the air crews. So there's one that's like a generic saint for air crews. And then there's like if you're from France and you're part of an air crew, there's a different saint. And if you're from Algeria and part of another air crew, there's another different saint.
Oh, brother.
There's like four countries that have their own air crew saint, which is completely unnecessary.
Okay. The recent Enron Anderson shredding frenzy suggests that it's time for unshredding software tools to come out of the closet. It's certainly feasible to restore a box full of shreds, particularly for ordinary coarse grain linear shredders. The efforts for cross-cut shredders would be acceptable in court. Anything with some natural language or graphical context is likely to be recoverable using digram, trigram, etc. statistics for the likely linguistics base and other context. However, in general, it's probably easier to start out with backup tapes and incompletely deleted disks.
So wait, so they're reconstructing the shredded documents is what?
That's what they're talking about doing, yeah.
Oh,
easiest
everybody
of
feels
all.
So safe because they shred their documents.
I shred mine, what the hey. Easiest of all would be to install scanners and transmitters or local storage in the shredder mechanisms because that would capture precisely the interesting materials deemed worth shredding. Now, okay. I gotta ask this question. who in their right mind is going to install a scanner in a shredder? You okay in there, man?
Oh, yeah, I'm fine.
Okay, I just...
Just not feeling very talkative today.
Okay. Yeah, I understand. I mean, you're what, 2 weeks... 2 weeks without a cigarette at this point.
2 weeks,
pretty much.
Smoking.
Yeah. And I am still on the patch.
Not feeling too peppy though, huh?
No, I'm just sort of out of it.
He's been having strange dreams. Apparently, one of the side effects of the brilliant technology of the nicotine patch is that because normally, of course, as a smoker, you're not smoking when you're asleep. You don't normally get nicotine when you're asleep. And if you leave the patch on, the nicotine has this really weird effect where you have these strange dreams.
I had a dream about raw meat last night.
Raw meat at McDonald's, in fact. Phil never remembers his dreams, but lately he does. And
that's
each day
weird.
They're a little bit weirder.
And now I wish I can't. They recooked the meat in the dream.
Well, that's...
They gave you a fresh bun, too, I hope.
Sort of.
I don't remember that.
Okay. You know why it is? Because you were watching Invader Zim with the McMeaties.
Oh, yes, the hamburger. Maybe.
Yeah. I don't know. Okay. Roger Needham submits to the Risks Digest that it is a principle in many jurisdictions a jury should not know about prior charges or convictions of the accused. In a Scottish court, a man was accused of a particularly revolting crime, he having been acquitted of a similar offense on a technicality a number of years ago.
Oh, come on. Lots of Scotsmen go for the sheep. It's not that revolting.
Judge ruled that the editor of a newspaper was in contempt of court by leaving reports of the earlier trial online in his archive because he had made it too easy for jurors to find out what they were not meant to know. The judge apparently believed that the greater ease of access in the online archive as compared with a paper archive was a difference of degree, difference not of degree, but of kind. Okay, whatever. That's...
They have the internet in Scotland?
Aye. Yeah, well, sort of. I mean, they don't have their own top-level domain. They fall under the .uk domain, but...
Yeah, the co.uk.
Well, co if it's commercial, ack if it's well they've got it divided up.
I haven't seen the ack yet.
And do they have the latest version of the internet?
But yeah, they use co where we use com. They use ac for where we use edu, and they have I think an or for org or something like that.
What's the ac for?
Academic.
Oh, academic. Did you? Oh, by the way, back to the Enron topic. I don't know if you've visited Cruel.com lately, my very favorite site in the whole wide world. But they actually had a link the other day to eBay auctions. All these employees, apparently, of Enron had been given these mugs that said, you know, Enron, where you take care of your retirement, or something like that. It was something about how secure your retirement was if you got it with Enron.
Oh, brother.
And they had all these sales, and these Enron mugs are selling like you wouldn't believe.
Classic propaganda.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what it is. What it really is.
Yeah, Cruel.com actually suggested that perhaps rather than investing so much in the actual stock of the company, that the employees should have all grabbed as many mugs as they could have and bet on that for their retirement.
Ay, caramba.
But who could foresee? Okay, so back to the Scottish story.
Yeah, well, I covered that,
was
that
it?
One. Yeah,
okay.
That was the whole story. I mean, the items they show up in Risks Digest are very short, usually one or two paragraphs. Mm. You know, just the interesting tidbits, you know. Submission from NewsScan says that Enrico County, Virginia school officials are recalling all 11,000 laptop computers that it distributed to its high school students in order to retrofit them with security software that will prevent students from using the devices for accessing pornography or changing their grades, abuses that reportedly have occurred since the machines were handed out last fall. Game and music downloading capabilities will also be eliminated or heavily restricted, and instant messaging will be limited to home use. Teachers have complained that in-class use of entertainment, file sharing, and messaging are disruptive. Duh.
Now, so now they have a new way to pass notes. Like, they're not going to find another way to not pay attention later.
Well, I'll tell you what...
I mean, you can take the computers away, but that's not going to make anybody actually pay attention to the
well,
class.
Well, now, they're taking the computers away, but they're taking the computers away to install security software on them. Now, what I ask is this. How long is it going to take before some enterprising student discovers the password and starts selling it to his classmates.
Yeah, or something.
Or probably, okay, I don't mean to be suggesting ways to circumvent security. So this next statement is for educational purposes only. After all, this is what this is about, is education, is it not? Okay. My personal answer would be to take a copy of the Linux Care bootable toolkit and stuff it in the CD-ROM drive and boot from that instead.
Mm. Or you could probably just go into msconfig and go into your startup and disable the security software before it even loads.
There is that.
There's that.
But you got to get to it first.
I'm just saying.
Well, I don't think that they're going to think of
boot in safe mode.
That, you know what I mean? I don't think that they're going to think to disable something like that.
Yeah, boot it in safe mode, and then.
Well, the thing is, I think that the obviously the administration are betting on the students not being able to do this. I think there will be
right,
like.
But if they've been able to go and change their grades using the computer, obviously they're smarter with computers than the staff are.
Bingo.
Then I think it's going to take gonna be long before they figure stuff out.
Now, if I was to look at my own high school as a statistical sample, now it's probably a bad choice, but I'll go with it anyway.
Yeah, you went to like a weird private high school run by nuns.
But if we take it as a statistical sample,
I mean, we may have a patron saint of the internet and all, but I really don't think that. I don't know.
There will probably be about 4 or 5 students out of every 100. That will figure this thing out.
Yeah, and once those 4 or 5 figure it out.
Well, they're not all going to be the most honest.
No, they're not all going to be the most honest. They're not necessarily going to all be the most popular, so it's not like it'll spread like wildfire, but.
And I can tell you the particular 5 students I'm thinking of, one would absolutely, definitely hire his skills out.
Mm-hmm.
No, it wasn't me.
No,
I was
well,
one
of
the 5,
not.
But I wasn't the you one that would hire him out.
You wouldn't have hired it out. You would have just showed everybody you knew how to do it. Everybody you liked. That's what I would do. I'm not interested in money. I'm interested in you know, like at work. I'll do special stuff for people that I like who get on my good side, you know.
Hey.
I do it all the time.
Well, another item from NewsScan, the SAS Institute has developed software that it says can sift through emails and other electronic text to discern falsehoods. The patterns in people's language change when they are uncertain or are lying, says Peter Dorrington, a business solutions manager at SAS. He says, quote, we can compare basic patterns in words and grammatical structures versus benchmarks to detect likely lies. For instance, overuse of the word or and too many adjectives can be giveaways, according to Vry's book, Detecting Lies and Deceit. SAS says its software can also be used to detect inaccuracies in resumes and job applications.
But you use very few words in your resume.
You do, don't you?
How are they going to figure that out using grammatical syntax if that's sort of repetitive, isn't it? But you use so few words and you're using such formal language, the whole thing's going to come off like a lie, which it probably is.
Let's run the Bible through it.
Let's run the Bible through it. You won't be able to make head nor tails of it. I'll tell you what'll happen. Everything will check out okay except for those letters from Paul. That's what'll happen. Yeah.
Hey.
Sorry, it's my rant right now. I'm going through the conversion process, and I like just about everything, but I just got to the letters of Paul, and they really tick me off.
I'll have to.
Yeah, we'll discuss.
I'll have to discuss that one with you later. I have to find out what's on your mind.
This is a low technology issue.
Yeah,
not for the radio.
It really is. It really is. But let me see here. A recent CNN article describes a computer program that Georgia Tech has employed to detect cheating in its Introduction to Computing and Object-Oriented Programming courses. 186 possible violations were found out of 1,700 enrolled students. I found this paragraph particularly interesting. This was submitted by Walter Robertson, by the way. But for the most part, the degree of similarity that this program is looking for, the commas are in the same place, the semicolons are in the same place, the spacing is the same, they've made the same mistakes, the only explanation, and what most students will eventually concede, is that they actually did it, says Islett. Whoever Islett was, there's not enough context here for that, but It seems to me that placement of commas, semicolons, and spacing would tend to be the same for the more experienced programmers who have adopted coding standards, or for anybody who runs their program through a code beautifier, unless perhaps Islet was referring to the content, comments, rather than the code. I gather from my readings and discussions with teachers of the introductory programming class that year after year, beginning programmers tend to make the same kind of mistakes. Gross syntactic mistakes are rejected by compilers, and modern compilers that would be used in teaching environments usually remark on error markers, such as using an assignment instead of a comparison in an if statement, or the use of a variable before it's been initialized. This filtering that takes place in the compiler would tend to concentrate the errors more and more into common problem areas such as incorrect handling of boundary conditions, failure to test return codes on I/O operations and library calls, so that coding errors are not likely to be uniformly and randomly distributed. I would also note that every submitted program is being compared to every other submitted program for the same class, as cheating is pairwise, not something that is in reference to absolute standard. Anytime you have pairwise interactions, the number of pairs goes up as the square of the number of samples. If the marker variables are discrete and are limited in range, then one encounters the birthday paradox, wherein it takes an unexpectedly small number of samples in order to find some pairwise match. My calculation is that the probability of an accidental code match would have to be less than 1 in 721,292 in order for there to be less than a 50% chance that the program will deem at least two innocent students in a class of 1,000 to have copied each other. Considering that Islet is quoted as saying that for a match the only explanation is that the student cheated, I would have to question whether the program authors undertook a proper statistical analysis.
Yes, obviously either they don't know statistics, they don't know people, or they don't know programming, or perhaps all three.
And of course, the computer is never wrong. The computer doesn't make mistakes.
Yeah.
The computer says you were cheating.
Well, of course, it's not the computer, it's the programming, which was created by a person who obviously was biased and didn't understand basic statistics.
Well, I'm going to make an obscure reference here. Trust the computer. The computer is your friend. Those who do not trust the computer are labeled subversives and are used for reactor shielding. Either of you know the reference?
No.
Okay. I'll tell you about it later.
That's why I laughed politely and let it go.
Okay. Like I said, it was an obscure reference. Let's see here. Do you have one you want to do?
I have kind of an interesting thing on patents here.
Go with it.
It's from Scientific American. It says, how badly does the patent office err? Gregory Aharonian. No, Aharonian. That's interesting. Has made his reputation by lambasting the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, hereafter referred to as PTO, for issuing patents without making a thorough search of the existing literature to determine the novelty of a proposed invention, which is supposed to be a key criterion for granting a patent. Aharonian's website, www.bustpatents.com, includes an archive of bad patents, which lists dozens of patents declared invalid by the PTO or the courts. Scientific American asked Aharonian for his short list of the worst patents ever. What follows is his selection of four really, really bad patents. Probably not the worst ever, Aharonian notes, but quite close. The first is three-dimensional pie charts. The PTO issued a patent in 1996 for a method of creating enhanced pie charts on a computer, a technique that was first published in computer journals as far back as the 1970s. This patent is a classic example of a simple software technique for which the PTO was unable to find relevant prior art, previous inventions, to invalidate the claims, Aharonian says. It demonstrates the PTO's need for more extensive libraries of books and journals, as well as the need to provide more time for the examiners to search through such materials. Quite often, PTO examiners look only at listings of abstracts of journals to determine whether a claim is original, but a lot of software techniques are not described in these databases. The second example is training manuals. Using training manuals in education is routine, but the technique in this 1998 patent merely describes how an experienced person can teach a novice by using an illustrated publication, such as a training manual. The technique is so common as to be something that probably isn't written about because it's too trivial, Aharoni observes. The practice of patenting such basic business methods is increasingly coming under fire. Okay, third one is the effectiveness of an ad. Advertising agencies often ask a panel of people to compare one advertisement against another. A patent issued in 1999 outlines a system for garnering feedback in the effectiveness of a new advertisement or broadcast commercial by comparing it with a control advertisement. Haven't ad agencies done this for decades, Aharonian asks? Again, a common trivial practice regularly described in academic journals on marketing and advertising, another prior art breakdown for a non-novel patent. The last example is gene profiling. To ascertain the effect of a chemical in drug testing, researchers habitually expose cells to potentially toxic substances. A 1998 patent was granted for a method of exposing cells to toxins and measuring how they affect the cells. This is an overly broad, trivial patent that many in the biotech industry don't like, Aharonian says. It is the broadness of the claims in light of prior art that makes this patent bad. It shows that the problems of prior art that are common in the software and electronics fields affects other fields, such as biotech.
That's so wild they give, that they can...
Like, the next thing, they're gonna give away a patent for the theory that the Earth is round, is the next patent they'll be giving.
That's the kind of direction it's going in. Now, I remember... I don't know how long ago it was. I want to say it was several months ago that there was a patent lawyer in Australia who, just to prove that Australian patent law was bad, went and patented the wheel. And he succeeded in doing so.
You probably could get away with it, yeah.
He did.
No, I mean, you could probably get away with it here, too.
I don't know. Do you want to find out?
No, let's I haven't try got it.
Then nah. can you sue like GM for using the wheel without your permission?
You could try, but the courts will probably find it a bad patent in the end.
Yeah.
Which they said has happened quite a few times. As some of these patents have been tried in the courts and lost.
I don't know. I did try to get a patent on something once upon a time, but I found it to be prohibitively expensive, so it's probably not worth the effort of trying to set up a test case here. Oh, let's see here. Let me see here. Okay. This one was submitted to Risks Digest by Thomas Zubin, who says, compact flash memory cards used to store data on many name-brand digital cameras and handheld computers face not just data loss, but may become entirely inoperable when subjected to electron beam irradiation, the Compact Flash Association said on Tuesday. He adds, I just checked the Compact Flash Association website at www.compactflash.org and didn't see any related news release about this, so I don't know how much research has gone into the assertion or if this is a potential birth of a new urban legend. It does bring up an interesting technology-related risk. I think most North American people make the following two assumptions. One, Postal Service will generally deliver anything small and not dangerous. And, two, Postal Service doesn't alter contents of things it delivers. When you add technology to either of these in isolation, there's no problem. However, the technology-related risk here is that when you add technology, irradiation, and flashcards to both of these assumptions, the result can be unexpected and damaging. I wouldn't want to... Yeah, that, I understand what they're getting at. They're saying that the headline had made a reference to anthrax. I don't think I read the headline, did I?
What about companies who send, like, live animals through the mail, like lizards and...
They got a problem. They got a big problem.
Yeah, I kind of wondered about that, because when we were in England, you know, if you wanted to sneak something back into the country, it occurred to me, I mean, why not just mail it? It's like livestock. Mail the lizards, mail everything.
I don't know. Anyway, we need to take a minute for a station break. Little Brother will return momentarily.
This is 91.5 WRPI Troy.
This is a public service announcement with guitar. Know your rights. All three of them. Number one, you have the right. We'll be right back.
And you're listening to 91.5 FM WRPI in Troy. The show is Little Brother. The topic is technology. And as for free speech, yeah, we're dumb enough to actually try it. Or stubborn enough. Haven't figured that one out yet. Anyway, let's see what we've got going on here. Continuing with the Risks Digest, unless you've got another one ready? No, okay. Jeffrey Brent submits that sometime back, he says, I was doing work that involved a lot of cutting and pasting of data between Excel files. Open source file, select cells, control C, select destination file, control V, repeat for dozens of source files. Got tired of having lots of source files open at once, so I changed this slightly. Open source file, select cells, control C, close source file, select destination file, control V, repeat. At first it looked like it was accomplishing exactly the same thing, but with exactly the same numbers appearing in their target cells. But when I tried further processing of the data, examining differences between adjacent cells, it became obvious that something was wrong. The results were much too grainy. Oh, hey, we've got a phone call.
Wow.
Yeah, let's see who's on the line. Hello, caller, you're on the air. Hello, caller. Ah, I just love it when they do that. Anyway, eventually, he says, I discovered the cause of the problem. When pasting from an open file, Excel correctly pastes the full contents of the selected cells. But if the source file is closed before pasting, it does not paste the full contents, only the displayed contents. The result of this is to automatically round-pasted data at the display precision. So with a precision of 2 decimal places, a value of 1.59835, for example, would be pasted as 1.59835 from an open file, but as 1.60 if the file was closed before pasting. And because the rounding precision here is the display precision, the pasted data looks correct until you change the precision to examine it. Fortunately, the display precision I was using was low enough to make for very large errors, so it was obvious that there was a problem. At a slightly higher precision, I could quite easily have ended up with significant but non-obvious errors. The risk here, one operation with two modes of behavior that look identical but aren't. I don't know, I'd say the risk was using Excel. Got one?
Yeah, this one's kind of interesting. I've been trying to read through it and find a part where I could cut it off, but it kind of all is relevant.
What's the topic of it?
Internet censorship.
That's a biggie.
It says, Alston's X-Files, the secret truth about internet censorship. All you have to do is press P, sputtered a quaintly outraged Senator Paul Calvert at a memorable hearing last century. And millions of porn sites would come across your computer, free of charge. Well, it didn't work for me. Not then, not now. Tired as my poor pee could be these 2 years later. But lurking across a keyboard was the X button. Worked then, works now, though these sites don't give much free of charge. Yes, there is internet porn, 2 years after Calvert and company trumpeted that they'd fix all that with online censorship laws that came into effect on January 1, 2000. And 2 years after the captain of this cyber smut crusade, communications minister Richard Alston, suggested that anyone who panned his supposed crackdown was in cahoots with pedophiles and drug pushers. But 2 years later, and this would be comic if it weren't being argued so seriously, the government still won't reveal what it's banned. It won't even reveal what it finds acceptable.
Oh yes, this is Australia, we forgot to mention.
Yes, yeah. The Australian Broadcasting Authority, charged with restricting the internet, is censoring its own censorship. It refuses to disclose or describe what its 5 public servants and several million extra taxpayer dollars are protecting us from. Even more astounding is how David Flint's foot soldiers claim, ASIO style, that if the ABA can't operate this scheme in secrecy, it might as well close up shop. Here's the story so far. Back in February 2000, less than 2 full months into the Clean Computers regime, a civil liberties group called Electronics Frontiers Australia applied under freedom of information laws to know what was being banned. Simple enough, you would think. After all, the body which performs the role of censor in the offline world, the Office of Film and Literature Classification, posts notices of which magazines, films, books, and games have been restricted and why. Yet when the ABA responded, 6 months later, to the FOI request about what had been censored on the net, all that came back were some heavily blacked out documents. The URLs, or web addresses, for banned pages were blackened out, perhaps understandably, but so were those to pages which had not been banned. To confuse matters, URLs to pages that complainants said promoted violence against minorities were not blacked out. It was all a bit inconsistent. Electronics Frontiers took the matter to the Administrative Appeals Tribunal, where it was finally heard on July 2001. The decision is pending. The ABA used a number of arguments at the hearing. First, there was talk about propagating child pornography, before it was made clear that the matters at issue in this FOI did not involve child pornography. Another problem, the ABA said, was that overseas hotlines, which worked together to ensure a bigger worldwide internet blacklist, had said that they would stop alerting the ABA to local nasties if the URLs became public information. The thing is, the ABA admitted that few complaints had come from overseas hotlines. The Electronics Frontiers argued that disclosing classification decisions was unlikely to result in fewer complaints and might prompt more. As for blacking out URLs of non-banned sites, the ABA said that this particular content was closely related to stuff which probably would be banned. To disclose the sites might lead people to actually illegal material. So, the ABA has not ordered that these sites be taken down, nor has it alerted commercial internet filter companies to screen out these sites. Yet it won't release the information under FOI. The public interest in keeping it all secret, according to the ABA, clearly outweighs any public interest in community review. This is a startling change in the principles of Australian censorship. It also conflicts with Alston's own assurances to the Senate and the government that he would release details of what was banned under the new law. The idea, he continually argued, was merely to ensure the same rules applied to computer screens as to film screens. Yet in the case of film, whether it's related X or banned or whatever, its classification is on the censor's database and anyone can access it. The web censorship system is absurdly more secretive. Even the deputy president mused about the wisdom of this. In the public interest aspect, I keep thinking of 1984. In relation to film and video, you know what you're not allowed to see if you're sitting here in Australia, and you know what you're not allowed to import. But with the internet, are you left in a situation where you don't know what you are allowed to see? Depends on what the ABA is allowed to get away with.
Jeepers.
Mm-hmm.
That's censorship. That's really sorry. I'm sorry. No offense to any Australians who might be happening to hear this program, but that, I'm sorry, is really, really sad. I don't know. I just don't know what to make of that one. Let's go back to the Risks Digest, and we'll take a quick hop over a little patch of ocean to New Zealand, where Southern Cross Healthcare bought out Aetna locally, and at the time, acquisition of Aetna's patient and practitioner databases was one of the Southern Cross goals. Since before Christmas, Southern Cross has run into increasing delays in paying claims. This has caused cash flow difficulties for some private hospitals. Southern Cross published ads saying it was all due to difficulties with their new computer system. More recent articles tell us the predictable story that the transition to a different system has, once again, been poorly handled. Big surprise. Let's see. You want to try one?
Oh, okay. I'm not ready yet. Sorry, I'm still reading this one through.
Okay. Erling Christensen submits to the Risks Digest I'm not sure whether that's a he or a she. I believe it's a he, so we'll go on that assumption. He says, I've experienced several apparently unrelated incidents where Lotus Notes is quietly losing data. I printed a mail message before I sent it. Some of the CC addresses were quietly and permanently removed. Did anybody say buffer overflow recently? Maybe it's more like buffer truncation, but certainly a member of the same family. Trying to reply to a mail I received, I discovered that three of the about 10 CC addresses in the incoming message had been truncated, rendering them invalid. No addresses were lost completely, but the amount of truncation that occurred suggests that a short address might be truncated into extinction if it's in the right place in the list of addresses. I checked the original RFC 822 header. That is acceptable. It was correct. By the way, correcting the addresses in place and resending had a very strange effect. The corrected addresses, and only those and only those, were turned into an X400-like address with a number and attributes pointing to my local environment. I had to remove and retype this sick addresses to have them accepted. I copied and pasted about 100 addresses from a spreadsheet into the BCC field of a mail. Everything looked okay, and the pasted addresses appeared neatly in the address window. I could scroll through them, etc., but the message was only sent to the first address. No warning of any kind appeared that a good 100 addresses had been discarded. I only discovered the error because I had asked for delivery notification, and I got very few. Had I not discovered this, only a handful of people would have been invited to a presentation. There were a few other addresses that had not been pasted in. These worked okay, even though they were entered after the skipped addresses. You know, this brings up an interesting interoperability question. He says he pasted them from a spreadsheet. I wonder if he pasted them from Lotus. or actually, I can't think whether they... I don't even know if Lotus still makes 123 or some variant.
I haven't seen anything Lotus in a dang long time, I'll tell you.
Well, we use Lotus Notes for our email system at my workplace.
Oh, that's
so
odd.
I'm familiar with it, but
yeah. I mean, I haven't seen Lotus 123 since must have been 96, 97.
Yeah, exactly.
It's been a while.
Exactly. Actually, I did see it more recently than that, but it was on a computer system that had been installed in 1988.
Oh my!
Yeah, it was the place in question was in need of some Y2K mitigation, which was the reason,
really,
which was the reason I had been there, and we upgraded them from all the way from DOS 3.3 to Windows NT 4.0.
Wow, how's you that can't for a you jump? Can't do that in one jump, can you? You have to.
Oh, sure, you can.
Can you
take the old computer out, put the new computer in?
Oh. Yeah, I guess that could work. It's just crazy enough to work.
Notes allows you to format messages with facilities more or less equivalent to an HTML editor. If a message is sent outside the Notes domain, all formatting is removed, even things like indentation and paragraph numbers, so a nicely formatted message may become rather unreadable, even ambiguous. Identification may imply a lot about the meaning, indentation may indicate... Let me start that sentence again. Indentation may imply a lot about the meaning of a text. No warning is given that formatting information is being removed. The risk of all this is that Notes accepts instructions to do something, does not complain about the input, and then goes ahead and does something else than would reasonably be expected.
Wow, it's just like supply orders at my old job. I used to order one thing and get something completely different.
Yep.
Yeah. Hey, once I ordered ballpoint pens and I got an inkjet cartridge.
Hey, that's cool.
Yeah, that was interesting. We don't have an inkjet printer, but hey.
You can obviously check for any of these events, but they're rare enough and different enough that you don't really know what to expect and when to expect a problem and what to look for in order to make sure everything went as expected.
Yeah. One time when I was working at an electronics manufacturing company, we got an order of speculums. I don't know why.
It's not electronic.
No, they weren't supposed to.
I mean, they
put
a light in it.
I'm pretty certain that I don't want to know why.
Wow.
But the
you know, I mean, when it goes to formatting stuff, will it let you add extra returns? Because you could always format it like you do a business letter and
skip
indentation. And
sure, you can do that. But if you use tabs anywhere, forget it; they're gone.
Why would you use tabs anywhere in an email, for crying out loud? I pretty much assume when I send out an email that the formatting may be completely mucked up by the time it gets where it's going. Because lots of times, like say for example, if you send something to somebody that has Hotmail. It's you may type it in neat blue Arial, but they're not going to see it except in black, stupid-looking courier font. And that's just how it's going to be, and that's just how it'll come back to you when they reply. So I pretty much assume any formatting I put in an email, unless it's in the form of a document that's attached and formatted before you attach it, is going to be mucked up.
Yeah, but you know, you just... Go ahead.
No, if you put, like, say, a Microsoft document... Like a Word document.
Mm-hmm.
So most people at home don't have Word anyway.
Don't they?
Like, no, they have like WordPad, which is built into Windows. But
oh yeah,
that doesn't.
You can open Word files in WordPad.
Yeah, but WordPad 6.0, which comes with Windows, is just
horrid.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Well, of course it's horrible, but you can open it.
It may not render the formatting of the text properly.
Anyway, any time that you're really concerned about formatting, why would you be sending it to somebody at home? It's pretty much work-related, and you'll probably be sending it to another company's computer.
You know, I'll tell you one along that line. As you know, and as anybody that's heard me talk about it before knows, I run Linux. They can't get Word for Linux. You can get some programs that emulate it nicely, but that's missing the point.
Run Linux, run. See Linux, run.
I had a conversation with a headhunter at one point in time. They'd asked me to email a resume. So I said, fine, I can do that. And I had it nicely formatted, and I put it into a PDF file. What's PDF? Portable document format. It's supposed to be cross-platform. Everybody's supposed to be able to read this thing. And this lady that received it said, I can't read this.
She probably didn't know how to change the document type.
Download an Acrobat reader. It's out there. It's free. Go get it, you know, and you'll be able to read this thing. And she just completely gave up on it. So I gave up on her because obviously she wasn't in the right field to be my headhunter.
Yeah, she obviously is not well-versed in computers or whatnot, but, in her defense, you were coming at her with some, like, weird, obscure thing, and...
PDF is not weird or obscure. You find it all over the web.
Yeah, but,
Especially when she said
email me a resume, I'm sure she meant, like, in a format like Word or Word Perfect or something.
Oh, yeah,
you know, there are actually people out there that still use Word Perfect. It's astonishing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I can't believe it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know this.
Every once in a while, somebody tries to email me something in that. And I don't know if you've ever tried converting WordPerfect into Word, but it doesn't work.
In fact, this particular resume was put together in WordPerfect.
Mm. Wow.
I was one of the WordPerfect users because WordPerfect's available for Linux. Anyway.
Yeah, well, you know, Billy, he's not exactly, Linux friendly.
Yeah, I know. Meanwhile, what company makes WordPerfect? Corel. What company also has their own Linux distro? Corel. I mean, yeah, they're not the only one with their own Linux distro, but you get my point. No? Anyway, let's see here. This came from Carl Fink. He says that according to the Detroit News, Becky Sivek doesn't even have long-distance service. Nevertheless, thousands of long-distance calls to all over the USA are being made. The calls disconnect as soon as somebody picks up. Some people are getting the same call dozens of times a day. And although Sivek isn't making the calls and they don't appear on her bill, call ID shows her phone number, meaning she's now getting many angry and or threatening phone calls from people demanding that she stop harassing them.
Wow, if somebody set this up on purpose, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. It's a great way to get back at the old ex-wife, you know. Oh, I have here, industry plans to restrict use of broadcasts, harming innovation. I don't know. I just don't see this whole HDTV thing getting off the ground myself, but it says.
I'm hopeful for it, but.
Yeah, but I don't expect it. Mm. I mean, it's like wishing for beta instead of VHS. You know, it's just, what happened to beta is the future of HDTV, I'm pretty sure. Will Hollywood's concerns about digital TV lead to a voluntary consensus, or legislation, to restrict home taping for free over-the-air TV broadcasts? Since digital TV is slated to obsolete analog TV broadcasts, this question could be very significant indeed. A recent organized effort to take control of home taping technology is bad for consumers. Its proponents hope consumers won't notice. But its effects could be felt beyond home taping. Excuse me. Eliminating innovation in new high-end digital video technology, wireless home networks, digital displays, and more. This project is the latest piece of a broad effort by copyright holders to attain perfect control over every use of a copyrighted work, even within a private home. Where have we seen this before?
New Macrovision.
Yeah, it's just like all the fuss over Napster and whatnot. New high-definition digital TVs have been inching their way into U.S. markets. But in the name of speeding up their deployment, a group of entertainment and electronics companies are pushing a scheme to severely curtail home recording of free over-the-air broadcast to this format. To work, it will have to be backed up by the government, with a ban or regulations on non-compliant digital devices.
Hey.
The companies, led by the major motion picture studios... Yes?
We have a caller.
We have a caller?
We have
My
a caller.
Goodness.
Let's Hello,
talk.
Caller. You're on the air.
Hey, Chuck, Phil, and Will. How you doing? This is Pete.
Hi.
Hey, Pete.
Hey, I just wanted to let everybody know that there's an all-day Linux install fest at the RPI campus in Lally 104.
Really?
If anybody wants to learn about Linux, today's the day.
Cool.
Goes on 2 to 10. Bring a computer and they'll put Linux on it for you.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, now that is cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's way better than the anime thing we have going on over here.
No, will they put...
we came in and there's this woman just walking around with a cloak and these moccasins on. It was really weird.
Will they dual boot your system for you if you already have an operating system on there?
Yeah, the idea is that once a semester, the new students bring their laptops, which I guess some of them are required to have, and they can load, boot from Windows or Linux after the install.
Huh.
Now, they don't put security software on it to prevent you from surfing porn or from trading music by file sharing systems, do they?
Yeah, this is my first... I'm just about to go there, so I'll know afterwards.
Let us know next week.
It's just a reference to an article we ran earlier this afternoon, that's all.
Stop over. It's Lally 104.
All right.
On campus. And I don't know, I heard a bit of your conversation about the PDF files.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
I might have a tendency to use those if I want to lock a file down so it doesn't get changed in between, because there's like this encryption piece about a PDF where you have to have the password to change it. I know there's XP try to start to adopt those things too.
Well, even without that, if you have a PDF file, changing the content is non-trivial.
Right.
It can be done, and I can tell you at least one route by which it can be done, but like I say, it's non-trivial, and that's the main reason why I sent my resume out that way, because the formatting was just exactly the way I wanted it.
Right.
The pagination was just exactly the way I wanted it. It was printer agnostic. It was display agnostic. And
why do the words control freak come to mind?
I wonder if there's if you can include a little Java applet with the PDF that would load a viewer.
I guess to my mind, when you're hiring a headhunter as a computer person, it just strikes me that you're not hiring her for her computer skills. You're hiring her for her ability to get you a job via fantastic contacts and stuff.
But
you're hiring
her
for networking skills.
Find something
not
that
computer
will fit.
Networking skills. But
I want her to be able
skills.
To find something that will fit. And if she doesn't know what I'm talking about when I talk to her, she's not going to be able to do that. And that is something I have experienced time and time again. And it really, it's bad.
I found you a job running the computer at McDonald's.
No. That's the register. It's not a computer.
I'm going to get off the line now. It's nice talking to you guys.
Take care,
Pete. Okay, Pete. Fine. We'll talk to you later.
We'll spread some Linux around.
Okay.
Good deal.
Bye.
Spreading the Linux love.
Cool. I had no idea that there was a Linux install fest locally. That's very good. Let's see. Do you want to pick that one up?
The thing about HDTV. Basically, I read the thing, and basically you can't hook it up with your home wireless networks. You can't hook it up with anything because they're trying to copy protect it, and they just basically talk about how much that stinks. That's the article.
That's it.
Nice little summary.
Yeah, I picked that one out mostly because of the fact that I had an experience, not last week, but the week before, where I have decided now that I officially despise MacroVision. Now, for those who don't know what MacroVision is, it's a system that is applied to recorded video content to make sure that when it hits your VCR, your VCR can't record it. What happened? Well, I bought a DVD player. Said DVD player I figured would naturally have the necessary connections to hook it up to my TV. Well, it didn't. But it had the connections that I could hook it up to my VCR. So I did hook it up to my VCR my VCR could display it.
Now, why would they... Can you record it on your VCR?
No.
Oh, so it still doesn't...
You see, here's what happened. You plug it into the VCR. Okay, the menus show up fine. The second you drop a DVD in there and press play, all of a sudden the picture goes all Scroogey on you. So I had to go out and spend another $40 on bits and bobs and do some little bit of custom wiring work to get this thing actually working.
Why would it not connect to your TV?
Oh, it didn't have... I have an old
TV.
Is
it an old TV? Yeah, that's what I thought.
It's only got RF inputs on it. And the DVD player had... composite output, it had an S-video output.
They're probably figuring that if you're playing a DVD, you have a newer television. I don't know why.
I like
my
TV.
Why would they think something like that?
The thing is,
yeah, they're forgetting stubborn people like you that just.
The thing is about 20 years old and you can't kill it.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know.
Yeah, they don't make them like they used to.
We're up against the clock here, so we're going to have to say adios. And I'd like to say that we'll be here the same time next week, but I don't know that because the new schedule is supposed to take effect tomorrow, but hasn't yet been published, so I'm hoping to find out when that is. If as soon as I find out, I'll post it to the website, so if you're interested in finding out when we will be on next week, please check my website at www.critterradio. Scratch that, www.radiocritter.com. That address again, www.radiocritter.com. Lastly, if you want to send an email to me, it's critter@verizoneatspoop.com. That again is critter, C-R-I-T-T-E-R, @verizoneatspoop, all one word, .com. You can also send snail mail to me by sending it to WRPI, 1 WRPI Plaza, Troy, New York, 12180. And you want to address that to Box 31 at WRPI, and that will get to me. So, with that... I guess that's it. We'll see you sometime soon. Take care.
I was chilling in the shine of the light, and I dialed doing anything my radio advised. With every one of those late night stations playing songs, in my eyes, I was seriously thinking about hiding the receiver when the switch broke, cause it's old. They're saying things that I can hardly believe. They really think we're getting out of control. Radio is the sound salvation. Radio is cleaning up the nation. They say you better listen to the voice of reason, but they don't give you any choice, cause they think that it's had better do as you were told. You better listen to the radio. I wanna bite the hand that feeds me. I wanna bite that hand so badly. I wanna make them wish they never seen me. Some of my friends sit around every evening and they worry about the times ahead, but everybody else is overwhelmed by indifference and the promise of an early bed. You either shut up or get cut out. They don't wanna hear about it. It's only inches on the reel to reel, and the radio is in the hands of some